14. Were we at on the Festival of Excellence? Pivac asked Arenki in the main office of the Justicars. Construction is actually ahead of schedule for once, Arenki said, consulting notes that flickered in the air above his paladin band. The amphitheatre will be done on time, and the fairground is close enough that the guildsmen can throw money at it and make it work. How many are they expecting? Pivac asked, keeping his voice casual while he looked at the red band of crystal on Drenki's arm. It seemed like his old Justicar, the polite and political young man with a ready smile and the keen interest in eventually getting Pivac's job. They expect 20,000 or more at the opening ceremonies. Drenki smiled. That spectators only, not counting the athletes, scholars, performers, and visiting dignitaries from the Empire. Most of the spectators will be upper-class merchants and nobles, given the necessity of travel and the cost of tickets, but they plan for a healthy number of working-class attendees as well. 20+, Tomlin muttered, shaking his head. And no local guard, since they're basically building this over that mine. Savert has a Mr. Skinner handling security for the event, Pivac said. But I'll be pushing for a strong Justicar presence. If anything goes wrong here, it'll endanger most of the Republic's best and brightest. Drenki pressed a few buttons on his band. I'd be happy to lead the security detachment, sir. I've cleared my own cases and am only assisting on others at the moment. You cleared your cases? Pivac asked in surprise. Benefits both mental and physical, Drenki said, holding up his band. With this thing, I don't need nearly as much sleep, and it seems to aid in concentration as well. I really think you should consider getting one, if you can afford it. I'm still used to my calendar being on paper, Pivac said wryly. And in any event, if you're free, I'll need you holding things in place up here while I supervise the festival.
Tomlin clapped Drenki on the shoulder.
Being left in charge, huh? Look at you.
It hung in the air for just a moment too long.
That sounds lovely, Drenki said, sounding a little puzzled. But I thought that Captain Pivac had been specifically requested as attaché for the Imperial delegation at the festival. Princess Veiled Lightning requested you by name, sir. So you'll be there, of course, but likely occupied and unable to give the Justicars the attention they need.
He left it hanging like a question. Did Pivac really care about the Justicars?
Good point. Pivac nodded. I'll see how Savert and Mr. Skinner would like to handle it. Anyone got a hot case that needs attention?
He looked around, then nodded.
All right, as you were.
He stalked back to his office, holding his carver cup just a bit too tightly. The ancients, whatever they were exactly, had returned through a gate in the mine. There was no way that a festival taking place in that same location was just a coincidence. 20,000 people, among them the wealthiest and most powerful people in the Republic, all in one place. A long package wrapped in brown paper sat on Pivac's desk, apparently delivered while he was meeting with the others. He tore it open. A glittering bracer made from red crystals stared at him from the wrapping paper.
Archvoyant Savert messaged me on his band, Derricky said from behind him. He asked me to tell you that this was compliments of the Voyancy. Generous of him.
Pivac didn't pick it up.
Perhaps now you'll actually make it to the cabinet meetings on time, Drenki said with a little chuckle. Do you need help putting it on?
No, said Pivac. I'm fine.
Well, said Drenki, smiling. Let's see it. I can add you to my list of trusted contacts. We'll get your calendar synced up and everything.
Pivac frowned at the band.
Looks complicated, and I'd rather not spend the rest of the day learning how it works. I'll take a look at it tonight.
Behind Pivac, Drenki stepped fully into the office and closed the door behind him.
As you, it's really not that difficult, sir,
Drenki said, and his voice went just a tiny bit off in a way that Pivac would never have noticed had he not been listening for it.
You should really put it on now,
Pivac sighed.
Drenki never gives orders, he said as he turned around.
Drenki shook his head, a smile still crossing his freckled face.
He'll learn.
He shouldered past Pivac, grabbed the paladin band, and reached for Pivac's wrist with his free hand. Pivac pulled back from the grab, let Durenki step in toward him and lunged in with a punch that would have floored Durenki under normal circumstances. This Durenki rolled with it, spun, and used the spin to build power for a kick that caught Pyvik in the chest and slammed him into the wall behind him.
"They weren't sure how much you knew," Durenki said, as Pyvik pushed himself back to his feet. "Durenki just thinks you've lost focus, that you're grieving for your criminal girlfriend. He thinks he can convince Savert to push you into extended personal leave and take your place." He grinned.
"The tiny little man."
"So you weren't controlling him the whole time," Pyvik said.
"Good to know."
He came in swinging. Durenki blocked the punch easily, took the next punch on his arm, and countered with a low uppercut that took the wind out of Pyvik's guard.
"Don't get your hopes up," he said, sweeping Pyvik's legs out from under him. "Durenki only needs a little voice in the back of his mind, a little nudge now and then. A few minutes he thinks he was lost in thought while I get a few things done.
You are a different story."
He knelt down beside Pyvik and dragged the captain's right arm up and across his knee, locking it at the elbow so that he could break it with the slightest pressure.
"The poor bastard who drives you will have to take over full time, which means that you, Justicar Captain Pyvik, go away."
Pyvik fought, but there was no way he could break free considering Durenki's hold and newfound strength.
"Figured you'd want to be in charge all the time," he muttered as he struggled.
Durenki sniffed.
"Why would I possibly want to manage every aspect of this sack of meat's life? I have real work to do."
He lifted Pyvik's paladin band with his hand.
"Goodbye, Pyvik. Enjoy oblivion."
"Same to you,"
Pyvik said, and brought out the charm he'd slipped from his pocket as he struggled. As Durenki's eyes widened, he smashed it to the ground, shattering it, and a wave of pale blue light washed across the room.
"Which, though turning down a gift from the Archvoyant seems," Durenki said in his normal voice, and then trailed to a halt.
"What in Aelmaseth's name?"
"Elf charm. Interferes with most crystal-based magic."
Pyvik pulled himself from Durenki's grasp. The man sat back, looking around in confusion.
"Expensive as hell, and illegal on Heavenspire. But I got one anyway, after those golems we fought a few months back."
"I..."
Durenki looked at Pyvik, and then at the paladin band he held in his hand, and then at his own band.
"Mind control, sir?"
"Looks like."
Durenki lurched back, dropped the band he was holding, and tore the other from his wrist.
"I haven't taken it off since I got it."
He put it on the table and backed away slowly.
"I almost took it off when I bathed, but then I just... decided not to."
He looked over at Pyvik.
"I could still be compromised. Protocol suggests I should be imprisoned and examined."
"Protocol suggests I shouldn't have had a damned elf charm on Heavenspire," Pyvik said.
"You want to sit in a cell, or do you want to stop the bastards who did this from doing it to everyone else?"
Durenki swallowed, his fists clenched and unclenched a few times. Then he tore his blade from its sheath and brought the pommel down hard on the paladin band that sat on Pyvik's desk.
"Oh, damn, sir," he called out as the band cracked. "I hope they have a good return policy."
Pyvik smiled.
"What a shame. Now, there's someone I think might appreciate everything we can tell her about the Festival of Excellence."
They gathered in the main dining room of Captain Thelenia's treeship. Hessler sat on a low, moss-covered couch with a somewhat clingy and two fruity drinks in on an empty stomach tan. Derry was distributing drinks as Kale poured them at the bar, with Desidora at the bar sipping a white wine with ice. Ulilenia, surprisingly in human form tonight, sat at a table nearby and nursed what looked like expensive liqueur, her dress still clingy and her hair still tumbling down in sultry blonde curls, like the hopes of a good girl in a bad city. Icy, still drinking his customary tea, sat across from her. "All right," Locke said, and held up her wine glass. "We can..." She broke off and looked at the wine glass. "This is red." A polite cough from the doorway made Locke look over. Captain Thelenia gave Locke a dry smile.
"As we are not currently in the Elflands, I opted to pick up drinks you uncultured heathens like, including a decent red."
"My respect for your dedication as a host," Locke said, raising the glass in a toast.
outweighs even my disapproval of your taste in wine.
The tannins make our crystals itch,
Thelenia said. And now I just feel like an arsehole, Locke said. Thank you for the drinks.
Rathaloth Leolon's last message before he went silent indicated that the Elflands are strongly considering retreat if the ancients re-establish themselves in force.
The elven captain grimaced.
I would prefer to avoid that. Unless I am invited to help elsewhere in the Elflands, I would be honoured to fly you anywhere that might help.
Appreciate it. As Selenia nodded and left, Locke turned to Kale. First off, your mother.
Fine, and out of the public eye, Kale said, nodding.
Nicely done, and you were right.
I wasn't going to make you say it in front of everyone, Captain.
We also stumbled into some surprising additional information when the Scorpion banished me to the realm of the Glimmering Folk, Hessler added. Apparently the ancients opened the gate to the Shadowlands, the home of the Glimmering Folk. Given the Glimmering Folk's inability to touch the ground, also confirmed, I believe that whatever gate they created must have been at Heaven's Spire. I'm not certain that helps us, of course.
You got back alive, Tern said firmly, holding his arm. That's what matters. We've got each other.
I'm sorry about your parents, Hessler added.
Damn it, Diz. Stop telling him what you say. You're not even supposed to be a love priestess right now.
Tern finished the rest of her drink, withdrew a small wooden cocktail sword, and pointed at Kale.
Hit me.
Any piece of a puzzle is a good piece, Locke said to Hessler. Lysidora had hinted strongly that Tern should get a pass on most of this meeting. And it fits with what we found here, she added, holding up the book she'd stolen from Westyke's estate. These are notes from the Westyke family, passed down for centuries. Hessler has been reading it for anything that could tell us how to destroy their gate. What have you found?
The brief version, Hessler said, is that the ancients came to this realm from their own. And, well, the Westyke family says that they led humanity to a noble golden age.
Enslaved them,
Tern said, still holding Hessler's arm. Hessler nodded.
That is the most likely conclusion, yes.
The Westykes were apparently high-ranking servants in the Old Kingdom, and after the fall of the ancients, the Westyke family was one of the first to press for exploration of what would eventually become the Republic. They established themselves here, specifically to prepare for and assist with the ancients' return. Hence, maintaining the Forge of the Ancients to recapture magical energy that had gone astray.
Charming, Ulilenia muttered.
Oh, sorry. That was their phrase, not mine. Hessler coughed. In any event...
This was the short version, Kale asked.
In any event, Hessler repeated, glaring at Kale. Even the Westykes don't have complete information on what happened, but they believe the Ancients came here to expand their power... and hunt for more resources. Most conquests boil down to resource distribution, with ideology a simple shorthand used to impress upon the lower class the... Ow! Sorry, yes, short version, he added, nursing his shin and glaring at Tern. They brought or created dwarves to mine the crystals, elves to work with the crystals, and Urujar for agricultural labour. They created Heavenspire as a mobile capital city, and at some point on the spire... probably looking for more worlds to conquer, they created the gate through which the Glimmering Folk entered. The resulting war destabilized the Republic and introduced hostile creatures, and the ancients appear to have decided that the danger of the Glimmering Folk was too great to remain in this world. Thus their retreat, after doing all that they could to limit the Glimmering Folk's access to this plane.
And when they left, Desidora added, they used their magic to create someone who could fight the remaining agents of the Glimmering Folk, and, if successful, reopen the gate at Sunrise Canyon and allow them back into this world.
Derry lifted a glass of milk in silent salute.
Wow, is anyone here not a direct or indirect creation of the Ancients? Kale asked.
I mean, they brought us over. Ululenia came from their leftover energy.
Derry's their kid, sort of.
Well, I guess Hessler and his illusion magic are from the Glimmering Folk more than the Ancients.
Hey, Derry, both our parents are assholes, Tern said, and clinked glasses with him.
All right, Locke said. That gets us some of the why. It doesn't tell us how to shut down the Ancients' Gate, though, and that's what we care about.
Actually, it does, Hessler said brightly.
In the Westike book, they counted their fortune in how the Glimmering Folk were largely driven from the world and the gate closed. The main problem was that as long as any one Glimmering Folk, thing, was present, it could draw others through. If the gate that first let the Glimmering Folk through had remained open, they would have overrun the, well, not the world, but the sky, at least. The ancients could only close the gate because it had been created on their side.
Desidora grimaced. That's why I couldn't hurt the gate the ancients came through.
Hessler nodded. Exactly. It was created on their side, so even though it appears to exist in our reality, you're always looking at an illusion of it, a sort of mirror image from their world. It can only truly be closed or destroyed on their end.
Locke nodded. That brings us to what Pyvik sent me about the Festival of Excellence. The ancients are using the celebration to cover up the fact that they're doing major modifications on the mine and building massive structures right on top of it.
Tern nodded and held up her drink.
That works with what we've got. They've built a giant amphitheatre and, going by the Lapitemporum information, it's covering a transmitter from the processing chamber. Right now, any energy they beam out of there would just fly up into the sky, which I suspect is not the end goal.
Heaven's Spire will be floating right over Sunrise Canyon for the Festival of Excellence, Locke said. Desidora frowned.
So whatever magic they're gathering goes from the processing center to Heaven's Spire, and then... What? Is it charging Heaven's Spire to be used as a weapon again? Or opening their gate wider?
Or something worse we haven't even considered, Kale added, and poured another drink.
But we don't need to worry about that, Locke said, smiling. Because they aren't going to do it. Instead, we're going to use Heaven's Spire to close the Ancients' Gate.